Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're turning our attention to sharp-tailed grouse in Wisconsin with our guest, Bob Hansen. He's a wildlife biologist at the Wisconsin DNR. Bob spent the last 12 years as the Northwest Sands wildlife biologist working on sharp-tailed grouse barrens habitat projects. And for 11 years before that, Bob was a wildlife technician implementing barrens and sharp-tailed grouse work at Crex Meadows Wildlife Area. So as we talk with Bob, I hope you'll join in. What would you like to know about sharp-tailed grouse? Let us know how you've been involved in maybe in conservation efforts. When's the last time you saw a sharp-tailed grouse? Give us a call. The number 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email us to talk@wpr.org. Bob Hansen, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining in today. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having us.
How many species of grouse do we have in Wisconsin? I think it's four, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, we have obviously sharp-tailed grouse like we're talking about today. We have ruffed grouse. There's a few spruce grouse. And I don't think I'm
prairie chicken.
One.
I don't know. Maybe what about greater prairie chicken?
Are they? Oh, prairie chickens. Yeah, I guess they're considered a prairie grouse. So yeah, we can call them that. Yeah.
And what makes the sharp-tailed grouse so important for us here in the state?
Well, it's really a different type of species for Wisconsin. It once was really numerous across the state, mostly through the southern two-thirds or so, then in the northwest part of the state, long ago. And then over time, as we've gone more to agriculture systems in some places, and in the northwest part of the state, as the forests have grown up into bigger forests, sharp-tailed grouse is kind of more of a brushland species. They kind of need that prairie-brushland mix. And as we've lost those types of habitats into more forested habitats, sharptails have reduced greatly because of that. But really, sharptails are a nice indicator species of a healthy barrens ecosystem up here in the Northwest. We know if we have kind of sharptailed grouse, it's kind of an umbrella species, really, that if we have a healthy sharptailed grouse population, we're going to have many, many other species as well. It's an area sensitive, which means it needs a great big open country to survive. So if we have a good enough habitat and enough quality and quantity of habitat for other species, we'll be there as well.
And there's maybe it'd be worth it to describe, because I think when people think about grouse, rough grouse probably comes to mind first. But what maybe the differences between the sharptail and the rough grouse?
Yeah, rough grouse, the rough grouse like that thicker kind of habitat, a mixture of age classes, definitely usually associated with aspen and those kind of young forest type systems, versus sharptails are more of that open country, wide open, where you can see a mile in many places. And they're also called the firebird. A lot of our management relies on prescribed burning, and they'll move in right after a prescribed burn in that really open type country and really thrive there. Sharptails are a little bit bigger than rough grouse, not a lot. And instead of kind of having a fanned out tail, they have these two kind of main pinnate feathers that are kind of make that sharp tail look to the appearance.
Yeah.
And rough grouse will drum in the spring, make that thump, 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 thump kind of noise, versus sharptails have lots of different calls, chuckles, and clucks, and I've always told people they sound a little bit like Martians when they're calling in the spring.
And of course, the sharptails are well known for their dancing during the courting season. Tell us more about that dancing and where it takes place.
Yeah, typically in a kind of an open spot, usually on a little bit of a rise with kind of an amphitheater effect around them, where the males can kind of show up and kind of jockey for position within the lek spot there. That's what we call the dancing ground, is the lek, and try to kind of show off for the females and attract a female to mate with. The males will typically kind of bow down and bring their wings out a little bit and really stomp their feet really, really fast and kind of make kind of a rattling sound with their tails. And then they'll jump and they'll fight and they'll really kind of strut their stuff for this mating ritual that happens every spring.
Yeah, it's really, really cool to see. And there are chances for people to see that ritual.
Yeah, we have viewing blinds on Crex Meadows Wildlife Area, Damacogins Wildlife Area, and also on Douglas County Wildlife Area. those reservations for those viewing blinds are run through our friends groups from those various three wildlife areas. And I'll warn you, they fill up really fast. It's becoming really a popular thing. And photographers just love it, because a lot of times we'll mow the leks. So, because the sharptails like it better when it's more open like that, but also leads to a really good photographs too.
Yeah, how would you apply to get in to see?
Yeah, I would check the Friends of Crex website, Friends of Namekagon Barrens websites, and they're the ones that kind of administer the calendar for those reservations.
Oh man, so the habitat is open, right? I mean, what does it look like? It's a little mixture, but it's open.
Yeah, the Pine Barrens is really a unique place, and in the world, one of the best places to see the Pine Barrens is actually Northwest Wisconsin, and because of that, we take great responsibility for that and try to do a good job of managing it. It's a mixture of kind of the same prairie-type species you'll see in the central part of the U.S., the big blue stem, stuff like that, the rough blazing star, things of that nature. Then you also kind of have this cool intermix of like what's called ericaceous shrubs, and that's really like blueberries and things like that. So a lot of blueberries up in the Pine Barrens, they like the fire as well. Then you also have kind of mixed in the oak, the jack pine, the aspen, some of these tree species that are also more of a pioneering nature of tree that kind of moves into these places as a fire or some other disturbance comes through and starts it all over again. So it kind of is a mix of what wants to be forest and what wants to be prairie, and kind of all going on, struggling together, and the wildlife can cash in on that. Really a great diversity. Some of our Pine Barrens properties, we do botany surveys out there, and we'll find over 200 species of barrens plants on those growing just naturally. And as you go further north, we actually lose a few species, around 160 species, but that's also due to getting further away from the detention zone where the prairie typically was. So we lose some of those species, but still really diverse for not planting anything and just managing the land the way it had been managed for many, many years before us.
Yeah. Well, how was it created in the first place? Was it fires? You mentioned fire.
Yeah, fire is really important. These are deep, deep sandy soils that dry out really a lot. They're very dry, not quite desert-like, but not quite what we typically think about in Wisconsin either. So they dry out a lot and very subject to burning. And fires happen very frequently in the Northwest Sands and in other parts of the state as well. But Native American burning was also, we know now, is a really important part of that. And those cultural burns, as they call them, were super important. And that's really what kept the Pine Barrens kind of more an open type system. And also other things too, lightning strikes, everything, holdover fires were all part of that fire, how that ecology was framed. And then the Pine Barrens is really a champion of the kind of the comeback. So you hit it hard and it comes back even better. Every time you seem to hit it with something like that, it just comes back even better. So it's a really neat system to work in and see it react.
Yeah, that's really cool. And they were, the barrens were once very widespread in Wisconsin. And now I think the habitat is actually considered globally threatened.
Yep.
And so is it people that led to the habitat loss?
Well, a lot of it was other land uses going to farming and things like that, but other land uses too. Like it was just kind of, we stopped the wildland fires from happening, and then the Pine Barrens naturally grew into more of a forested type system, and that's not all bad, because we know that the barrens is still underneath all that, and if we can sometimes we can open that land back up again, we know we're going to get a really nice response from the barrens community. And then as we start prescribed burning, it just increases and multiplies the number of species we have out there. So it's a little bit more forested than it used to be. The Northwest Sands is about 1.2 million acres in size, and historically is thought to be about half to two-thirds open, and now we maybe have 50,000 acres of pine barrens, so of that more open type pine barrens, I should say. So the math is pretty easy to see why the species that need that more openness, why they've been struggling.
Yeah. Mike in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon. My question is, we have the Wild Turkey Federation, which has brought back our turkey population to great numbers, and the Pheasants Forever, which has brought back our pheasant population to drastically awesome numbers. And how about grouse? I know there's some small organizations for grouse, but not much for sharp, nothing so far as I know for sharp-tailed grouse. And because I know my uncle used to raise grouse and turkeys and pheasants for the state in the 90s. But I don't hear too much about the grouse.
The sharp tail.
Yeah. And it's nothing but a sharp tail. Is there anything out there like that?
Yeah, the few translocations we've tried, what was it, 6-8 years ago now, we went out to Northwest Minnesota, worked with Minnesota DNR and grabbed a couple hundred sharp-tailed grouse and brought them back to a place called Muckwa Barrens because they were down to just a few birds there, and they had pretty good habitat. And we tried doing that release, and it was a slight increase over the time period, but not a big increase. So the few times we have tried it, and in other places they've tried it too, what we found is really the key is to having that habitat just perfect and lots of it. To the point now we're finding if we build nice habitat right adjacent to the where the birds already are within 3.1 miles is the number we use, the birds will naturally move there. And it seems like if they move there on their own, they're much more successful.
Ah, man, that makes sense. Thomas in Manitowoc has a question as well. Let's go there. Hi, Thomas.
Hello, I just got on the phone, so I don't know if you covered this, but up by Spread Eagle on the Barrens there, between Iron Mountain and Florence, there used to be sharptails there, and they've been actively burning it. I just wondered if they had a plan to reintroduce sharptail grouse up there. Oh, and one other thing, if anybody wants to see red-headed woodpeckers on the Spread Eagle Barrens. There's a lot of red-headed woodpeckers up there for the last few years.
Very cool. Comment, Robert?
Yeah, the Spread Eagle Barrens is a really nice barrens. They had sharptails years ago. It'd be great to see them there again. Currently, we're still trying to restore them to where we currently have them and trying to get them to move into more landscape, more of that Northwest Sands landscape. And as we do more new habitat projects, we are seeing them move on their own, which, like we kind of talked about already, it seems to be the more efficient way or the way the bird prefers to do it. And like I say, we dropped off a couple hundred birds at Muckwa, and it didn't work out so good. But we're hopeful that through this kind of natural restoration of the landscape, the birds keep moving on their own. And that seems to be the way the birds want to do it.
Yeah. Somebody else wondered, what do they eat?
They eat a little bit of everything. They live in a really, really diverse landscape, so they have a huge buffet laid out for them. They'll eat buds off of trees. They'll eat catkins, kind of the pre-flower part of the tree. They'll eat berries. They'll eat insects, everything out in the landscape, little greens, especially off of strawberry and stuff like that. They really have a very diverse diet, and definitely in that first month or so of life, insects are really, really important to the young broods.
Hmm. You worked, you've done a lot of work at Crex Meadows. What's the history of Crex Meadows?
Oh, that's a volume in itself. It started as a Crex carpet company, back in the 1930s and 40s. They actually made like woven rug type carpets there, almost like wicker type furniture too. And eventually with the advent of, modern carpets, the Crex Carpet Company kind of, and they got Crex actually from the name Carex, which is the scientific name for sedge. Ah. So it kind of was kind of neat how it moved into kind of the wildlife area becoming Crex Meadows, because eventually the land went tax delinquent. The state ended up with the land, and it's a lot of open marshes and some pine barrens. So it was a great spot to do waterfall management, great spot to do barrens management for sharptails. And the state has been managing there since, I think, 1950 something. So it's been a very long time.
Yeah, I think they wound up with 12,000 acres or something like that of tax delinquent land. And, and then I think they bought 5,700 acres or so.
Yeah, it has grown to one of the biggest wildlife areas in the state and really a cool spot to visit, I would say, especially in the spring.
Oh, yeah. And the process that it took to convert Crex Meadows into a suitable sharp-tailed grouse habitat, that is an interesting story in and of itself.
Yeah, the sharptails were in that area forever, as far as we know. But then, as the trees started regrowing with the advent of taking fire away, we started to prescribe burning again, and the birds have been doing better and better as we've gone. And in more recent times, we saw the sharptail grouse population continue to decrease despite our efforts. We took a hard look at it, and we decided we needed to do a better job on our habitat management, and kind of came up with a few recommendations. We've been implementing that kind of focused down approach and prioritizing that, because it is a really important habitat, like you're saying. And within a few years of really focusing down on that approach and really knocking out thousands upon thousands of acres of prescribed burning and putting fire back on the landscape, the Firebird responded, and they're actually doing quite well now, especially at Crex Meadows.
Yeah, that was what I think it was the Northwest Sands Regional Master Plan or something like that. That was followed from maybe, I forget when that happened, maybe 2019 or so.
Yep, and that, a lot of that was also based on the Northwest Sands Habitat Corridor Plan, which was from 2012. So it was all fairly recent, really, where we kind of really figured out what we needed to do. And that's one of the cool things about barrens management and sharptail management. A lot of times you're talking about kind of rare species, we don't really know what to do, but now we've really started really getting after the habitat work and see the birds respond. Now we know what to do, and it's all about the habitat. And we want to make sure we stay after that because it seems to really be impacting the sharptails in a positive way and many other species as well.
Yeah, I think it was about 2021 maybe when the population started to turn around. It's not that far long back.
No, and that's why stuff like this education outreach to us is really important, because in 2021, we think we hit the low of the lows. We hope we hit the low of the lows. We go out and count those dancing males in the spring where we count most of the males we figure we use as the index to the population. But in 2021, we only counted 132 males dancing in the entire state.
Wow.
And now this last year, just at Crex Meadows, we counted 119 and 275 in other spots in the Northwest Sand. So it was a really nice turnaround, but has been fairly recent.
Yeah, it sure has. And I think last year for the first time, Wisconsin held a limited hunt for sharp tails. I how did the DNR come to that conclusion?
Yeah, that was something as we were looking at a bunch of the plans. We have a sharp-tailed grouse management plan that was approved in 2024, and we have a sharp-tailed grouse advisory committee made up of lots of different stakeholders, including some DNR biologists, but also from our partnerships in the federal forests and the county forests, Audubon, Rough Grouse Society, Sharp-tailed Grouse Society, very important member, Wisconsin Conservation Congress, so lots of different memberships in that committee. And we were tasked with coming up with some metrics that would help us decide when we would want to have a season yet again. Because the last season was in 2018. And then within the last like 2 years or so, we finally settled on some metrics. And then last year, the birds met all those metrics. And those metrics are, how many dancing males we have out there in the spring. What was the winters like for the bird? Was it good survivability conditions? What was the brood production like the year before? And even that spring, what a nesting success look like it might be? And then we also look at what's the habitat condition too? Do we have enough habitat and is it of a high enough quality?
And
look at all those metrics to make the decision.
And so there were some hunters. Was that a, I'm trying to think, was that a lottery kind of situation or what?
Yeah, there was an application. We ended up for the state hunters. We had 12 tags, and five of them again getting filled. So it was a very limited hunt.
Yeah. So and we're talking a bag limit of one, correct? Or
right, one per tag, and there was only 12 tags available. So for state hunters.
Okay. Somebody might say, well, how would holding a hunt help the conservation effort?
Well, it has brought some attention to it for sure. and there was some fear that, we would never see this population come back again. And that was one of the things people really, really missed. Like they grew up hunting sharp-tailed grouse, wherever it was, back behind the back 40 at home, or they'd come travel to someplace and hunt them. They really, really missed doing that. And we heard that from lots of different folks and hoping we could get that back again. So, and we were answering the question every year, should we have it again or not? And for a number of years, the answer is no, until the birds finally responded. So we do have more research ongoing to help us out with that decision. What science we have now is what we base those metrics on for making decisions today. But in shortly to come, we're going to have kind of what a minimum viable population is and some other things that might help us make those decisions and kind of hone those quota setting metrics to be even better.
Yeah, and they're a little bit bigger bird than the rough grouse. I've eaten rough grouse, but I've never eaten a sharp-tailed grouse. Had that experience, but they're a good tasting bird, I'm told.
Yeah, they're not quite as of a white meat as rough grouse, or a little bit more of a pink, but it's a very flavorful.
So what are your hopes for the future of sharp-tailed grouse in Wisconsin?
Well, I hope the first and foremost, and we know what the best things we can do is, you know, it's habitat. So continue to working on the habitat, both on our all the wildlife areas and our partnership lands where we have current projects. We also want to expand to have more projects to help connect the landscape. What we need to help connect the Northwest Sands landscape is more kind of projects between the bigger projects, what we call a stepping stone type corridor. So every within 3.1 miles, we need another habitat project of sizable enough to have species movement between those properties. And that's for a whole host of species, that's going to be helping out. I mean, monarchs come to mind, things like that, that especially ones that migrate and move. But hopefully on the habitat front, we can continue to reunite this Northwest Sands landscape for many species, including sharptails. And as we do that, we should help restore this population to even a higher number.
That's great. And what can community members do to help sharptail grouse conservation?
Well, certain organizations like the Sharp-tailed Grouse Society have been pitching in. I talk to them, you know, several times a week as far as what can we do, how can we help. So it's a great organization to join and help out. They can come and view sharptails on the Lex and contribute to those friends groups, and also maybe be through seeing that dance help us spread the word that's important and unique to Wisconsin. A lot of people think of the North Woods as all woods, but it's not all woods. There's other things going on there as well. So just kind of help out with that, get that message across. There's some neat things going on kind of in your backyard that, you know, hopefully you can learn more about and also educate others. We have a lot of information on the DNR website on the Sharp-tailed Grouse Management page. That's where I kind of stuff everything there, but that's where our management plan is at, and kind of our friends group brochures are there as well.
It's great. And if you, I tell you, seeing that dance, you're never going to forget it. it's quite an experience to see. And I hope I know every year those blinds sell out kind of in pretty darn quickly. When can you apply, by the way?
They're open now. Open now, and I think some are already full.
I wouldn't doubt that a bit, Bob. Hey, it's been a pleasure talking with you today. I appreciate it, and I really appreciate all your years of work on this. It's got to feel good to know you've done some things to help the population, and we appreciate your efforts. Thank you, Bob.
And it's a great big partnership up here, so a lot of folks involved.
Bob Hansen, wildlife biologist at the Wisconsin DNR. Really, really interesting to talk with him. And hopefully we can get him back and down the road and keep track of how that population is doing. Up next, though, we're going to take a look at glyphosate or Roundup, some new information about that. And I hope you'll join in with your questions about Roundup. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.